Okay, the first question from the floor. The state has an $11 billion unfunded liability in the retirement system. In other words, the promises that we made to state employees in the 1970s, 1980s, and 1990s for generous, defined retirement payments and health care are now coming due, and the debt will have to be shouldered by all Alaskans. Without getting too much into exactly why this happened, please talk about how paying off this debt will affect the budgets of the state and municipalities like Sitka.
The last number I got from one of the ARM board members, Martin Peel, out of Ketchikan, it's not 11, it's 14 now. And the number, 14 billion. The number is big enough, if we back up a few years ago, some of the union representatives that we were discussing the potential solution with this problem didn't even recognize it as a problem. And as time evolved and we worked through this issue, initially we ended up, you know, both camps taking extreme views, and it doesn't work very well in the long run. But as we've evolved over the last 4 or 5 years, both sides of the discussion realize that, one, it's a real issue to deal with, both at the local level and the state level. 10 or 14 billion is a real number with some flexibility on it, but it's a big number and we need to deal with it. And there's discussion now how we do it. You know, do we put cash in it, which I favor, and I tried to convince some of my colleagues last year to put $1 billion or $2 billion in it, and PERS and another billion or so in TERS, or do we just let the money stack up outside of the trust in another savings component to use in the trust later on if needed. So that's an evolving discussion in Juneau, but the conversations the last couple of years, I think, have been more fruitful than the previous years, because both sides are sitting at the table realizing we got a problem and we need to both work together to resolve it. There will be a squeeze-out issue. You know, if you take $1 billion, $2 billion, $5 billion, whatever it is, out of our savings component, that's a lot of money. And it's going to affect capital projects, and it's going to affect the operating budget in the future. There's no way around it. It's going to take cash in the billions.
Okay, thank you. The next one.
Let me just just with people at home. I don't want to leave it the wrong impression. The trust has ample resources. There's no cash liquidity issues. Nobody's going to not get their retirement check. The people that are retired and the current employees under tiers 1 and 2 and 3, they're going to be taken care of. What we're talking about here, the discussion is how much cash should the trust have. So there's no liquidity issue that we're facing, or we perceive that we'll be facing, to push the state to a point where we'd have to have a discussion like some of the other states and changing benefits or changing the Constitution. That's not even on the table.
Okay. The next question. Can you explain the benefits of Proposition A to Sitka, Southeast, and the state overall?
Prop A is a bond package. There were some of my colleagues that wanted to do ports around Alaska. Of course, they didn't include us. So we broadened it out to roads to resources and some ports and put together a list of projects. For Sitka, there's the $14 million for a dirt road to Catland Bay to access Shattuck property. They've got a potential quarry site and gravel and some stream restoration in Catland that needs to be done. Plus, they own a lot of land in the valley that the corporation could be working on for generations. That road would be probably 14 to 18 feet wide with turnouts, kind of like Harbor Mountain before the big upgrade. There's also a road in Shelter Cove, now McKetchikan, that's $19 million. There's a couple on Gravina. There's $40 million. Excuse me, that was cash, the one to Cake. Then there's some projects up north. There's some money for a rail extension in Matsu. That's what the Matsu guys wanted. And there was the port in Anchorage, along with a bunch of roads in Anchorage. So I think it's good for the overall state. Bond levels are low. I initially supported a cash position just to pay for it versus bonded, but it's a democracy and there's more of them than me. So we went forward and did the bond style of financing. So hopefully the community will support this. There's also some dock development out at the APC site, which should help us with Blue Lake, and also at the end of the day when we have Blue Lake done, the old Pomo site will be better equipped to enhance and develop itself, so it's not a burden on the community, and actually a you know, an overall stronger job generator. The dirt roads that are being built, roads and resources will probably be there for generations. Don't expect the paver to show up, because it's not even contemplated. And they're just minimal access.
Thank you. Next question. Please explain the status of the natural gas pipeline.
If I was chairman of Exxon Corporation, I could do that. They're the only guys that know, I think. And I'm, you know, kind of sarcastic when I say it, but when it comes right down to it, that's the firm that's going to make the decision. Exxon is in Alaska for their gas. BP's in the state of Alaska for the cash flow. Conoco's here for the oil. And that comes right out of testimony from the Senate Finance Committee. That's how Alaska fits in their portfolio. The route down the continent is about as dead as a doornail due to costs and competitive issues dealing with shale gas, and basically the price of gas is so low, the tariff just overwhelms the project. The in-state LNG gas line, I think we got a shot at it. It's $50 to $60 billion. And if Exxon, BP, and Conoco can secure their contracts for delivery, they've got the supply of gas. Getting the gas isn't that hard because they've got all the oil infrastructure that's been up there for 30 years. It's the cost of that development. I think the $65 billion upper number, and you can pick your number, $60 billion, $50 billion, doesn't matter, doesn't count tankers neither. They've got to build a fleet of ships. So I think it would be personal opinion is I'd like to let those three firms flush that project out a little more before the state of Alaska goes, you know, hell-bent for leather, building some little straw line that's not very efficient coming out of the interior or coming out of the North Slope, to find that one day they get up, Exxon comes out and says, we're building that gas line. And then we have $8 billion hanging out. So I think we need to be a little bit careful as we go down the road and give them a little more time. They're seriously looking at it. I don't know if the terminal would be in Valdez or it would be in Cook Inlet. But there's also a wild card, and that's the thinning of the ice of the Arctic. They could very well be internally waiting for the Arctic ice to thin out and take the gas out of the Arctic by freighter without a pipeline. And only they know, and they're certainly not going to tell us. So we're running three quarters blind on the subject. That's the best I could from a very high, you know, high level view. The other thing I'd like to mention is I want to personally work on trying to get LNG into Southeast. The state will pay up to $15 million or half of a storage tank, and I don't think that that's completely out of the question. We just got to come up with a load and the volumes. Because when they talk about gas to Alaskans, they're not talking about us. And I've talked to Trevor about that and Jay, and it's just one of these things we need to flush out, and if it's not going to work, I'd like to know why and see if we can't debottleneck it, and then if it works, can we get it in place? And it would probably be for the major towns, Ketchikan, Sitka, and Juneau first. And I'll have more conversations with probably ConocoPhillips, or kind of the gas company, when I get to Juneau, sit down with their representatives and have some conversations with them. They're actual gas guys from their company that know the business. Or gals. Sometimes it's gals. So.
Thank you. Okay, next question. Horizontal drilling into reserves. Is there a future for this in Alaska?
I don't think they'll let us drill horizontally over into NPRA, although I'd like to see that done. Actually open NPRA. because there's a reasonable chance that we have another Prudhoe Bay sitting over there. Horizontal drilling, that's what the industry does. Lowers your footprint, give you a better bang for your buck. And they're extending their horizontal drilling further and further as technology expands over the years. And then you have fracking and all this other type of enhancements. So I guess the short answer is yes. I don't think you're going to see too much vertical drilling. It's just not very efficient.
Okay. Next question. We're going to take a little bit of a turn here. What support can, will, or would you offer the programs on the old SJ campus?
Wouldn't that be you?
What support can, will, or would you offer the programs on the old SJ campus?
Oh, I don't know. You know, you get in the SJ, it's a non-municipal entity. It gets stacked against other non-municipal entities, and this Senate district is getting more communities at the table, and some of them have some rudimentary infrastructure relative to Sitka and Ketchikan. So it's going to be challenging. As far as, you know, should SJ run a pellet boiler or some kind of a wood boiler to reheat some of their buildings, I don't know. They used to do it with steam. So I don't really have a lot of background as far as how much that would cost or how you'd even do it. There are some discussions in Ketchikan about linking up some of the community buildings downtown and firing them off, you know, biomass, which has its place and it has its benefit to help us with our hydro load. But at the end of the day, you have to generate electricity to run an economy. And quite frankly, I'd rather have natural gas in Southeast than biomass, my personal opinion. I think it's more environmentally friendly and the supply is more predictable.
Okay, and our next question. How does the University of Alaska fit into the state's budget?
It's the third biggest. It's probably 700 million now, somewhere in there. Fastest growing of the last several years. I think the university should give it some consideration because when our operating budget gets tight, you got HESS, Health and Human Services, you got K-12 education, you got the university. Two of them, the first two are about $1.2 billion or so. It's going to be easier to whack the university than it is going to be K-12. And I've been mentioning that year after year to the university presidents when they come in and talk to us. They need to be careful that they're not building a deck of cards. Because at some point, our operating budget, which has been growing too fast, and I've been mentioning that to the chamber year after year after year, is finally getting more in the press now than it has in the past. The problem is the operating budget, not the capital budget. We can turn that off like a light switch. But the operating budget goes on and on and on. So it's a challenge. And I don't know how the Board of Regents is going to deal with it. But when you come up against Grandma and Grandpa in K-12 education, I think university is going to have a tougher argument to put at the table and survive with, personally.
Okay.
Well, let me add one more thing.
Yes.
That's why I want to get our deferred maintenance at the university done here in Southeast. I don't want to have, when those chickens come home to roost, I want Southeast, UA Southeast to be in a darn good shape. I don't want to be caught where we're the last guys getting our deferred maintenance and our places fixed up and the cash flow runs out. Because we're a very small component of the university. We're at the bottom of the totem pole. First comes Fairbanks, then comes Anchorage. Then you get down into the region areas, you get down in Southeast, you get to Juneau. You still got to get going down to get to Sitka. And that would include Juneau as far as a particular interest to make sure they're in their deferred maintenance is squared away. So it's all the Southeast. Because that issue is going to come home to roost, no doubt about it. Yeah, I think the university wants about $50 million a year in deferred maintenance. And I think it's going to be difficult for them to get that.
All right, we have about three more questions left, but we are at the noon hour, so I'm going to give everyone a chance to stand up and stretch their legs. What is the district's responsibility regarding tsunami debris?
virtually none. As far as financial, I think it needs to come from the state and the government.
What are the chances that the ferries might burn LNG at some point?
I was hoping at one time it would be, you know, at least 50-50, but on their design, I don't think they're going to set the ferry up for that capacity, which I personally think that would be the load that we should go after. Natural gas-fired ferries. And they do it other places in the world. But it's a different mindset to go to natural gas, even in Southeast. I mean, we've always been on oil, and then we went with wood for 10,000 years, and then oil, now hydro. Trying to get the concept of natural gas on the table, it's going to take some discussion.
Okay, thank you. So two more questions. The next one, would you be willing to support state election finance reform in an effort to reduce the influence of large corporate and or outside financing of elections?
Well, particularly outside financing. We are capped now individually at 500 and 1,000 for PACs. That seems reasonable. I'm not really excited about the super PAC issue. I'm a little concerned about that. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out. I kind of like the idea of, every voter can make their contribution to who they want to see represent them and let the people decide. That's not the corporations, by the way. I don't believe a corporation is a person.
Okay, and your final question of the day. Occasionally, people complain about how state dollars are spent, implying that certain projects in the capital budget are wasteful. Please explain how legislators decide which projects are included in the statewide capital budget.
There's a document I put on the table, I should have mentioned earlier. It's got several areas in it that we've worked on. My office and myself have worked on for the last several years. I don't get in the press much. Truth in budgeting, when we cleaned up the shell game with general funds. CAPSIS, which is the system we're talking about here, and I'll get right back to that. State bond rating being improved to AAA, higher than the federal government. The state savings position, over $14 billion with another $42, I think, in the government fund. And oil and tax accounting, which I covered earlier. The CAPSIS system, the capital project submission and information system we put in, where you couldn't put a capital project together on a bar napkin down at the, your favorite watering hole and bring it up, throw it in the hopper like they did, that's happened in the past. You have to put it in the system, and then the system's locked about the middle of February, and the only two guys that got keys to the system is the two co-chairs of finance, one in the House, one in the Senate, to go in and change them. But when we put in, we get the governor's submission of the capital budget, we look at that, and normally it starts at my desk the last 6 years, and I go through it, and then we look at adding bigger projects, million plus, all over the state, and the allocation of capital. There is amounts where a senator will come in, say, with a $100,000 or $50,000 project, and I don't spend much time on it, on those projects. I leave it up to the individual senators in their own district to figure out what they want, as long as it's on the municipal request list. So when we put it in, we have a little tighter bounds in the Senate than the House does. And the folks in Anchorage, they have such a high concentration of representation, they get a lot of frilly stuff in their budget requests, which, down here we're trying to just keep our lights on, function, keep our economy functioning. So there's some stuff that the Anchorage senators want that personally I wouldn't put in. And then when we hand that budget to the House, like this year, we had $900 million we were going to add. The total capital budget was right under $3 billion. $1 billion of it, roughly, in round numbers, was federal. $2 billion for the state. The governor spent $1.1 billion in his request. We had $900 million. I thought the governor was a little piggy on his share, but that's just a discussion. He's not the appropriator. But nonetheless, he selected good projects, and I thought he did a good job, and so we set that argument aside for another day. But the 900 that we put in, the legislature, 700 roughly came from the Senate. That's 50-50 math from Burt's High School math. 700 from the Senate and 200 from the House. So sometimes the House guys get in trouble with 50-50 math, but we work on them. So that's 50-50 Senate math, which is normal because the Senate normally puts in bigger projects. And then we hand it to the House. They can do whatever they want to with, you know, with their 200. They allocate it amongst the House members. And they agree to leave our Senate stuff alone, and then we pretty much leave their stuff alone that they add. But if you're not sitting in the majority, and you're not sitting at the finance table, and if you're not one of the chairmen, that influence definitely changes. So the head tax, how that happened the last several years, Bill Thomas and myself, who's an operating budget co-chair down the hall, would come down to my office, or I'd go down to his, and we'd cut up the head tax money, the two of us. And then we'd bring it out to the other members and then go from there. Now, I'd also have discussion with him on big projects around Southeast, back and forth, but not the little stuff, like the dock on Swan Lake. That's not a discussion item for, that's just an item. But when we talk about Blue Lake or we talk about, you know, harbors, stuff like that, there's dialogue amongst the finance co-chairs and then amongst the finance members. And then the discussion diminishes from there. There is no discussion within the minority. I don't know what they talk about. They are also not at the table when we allocate the big portions of their capital budget around the state. They have their little piece of the pie they get mess with, but they're not in the discussions on the direction and speed the trains run. That's why it's critical. Well, I don't want to be in the minority, and in the majority, I'd prefer to be on finance. And once I'm that far, I'd prefer to be chairman. So, depending on how the allocation goes of the duties within the legislature, but it is extremely critical dealing with huge appropriations of tens of millions of dollars, like Blue Lake, that we have a very effective team in Juneau. That's a plug for Bill Thomas, in case there's any confusion. It is going to be very difficult to bring home $30 or $40 million for a town of 9,000 people. And I'm going to need all the help I can get. And I worked well with him for several years. And no disrespect to his competitor, he's a nice young guy, but just the inner workings of the legislature, it would make it extremely, extremely difficult. So, and that's kind of how it. And we do argue amongst some of the big projects. I don't like the railroad extension in Mat-Su. I think it's an upside down capital project. We could never get something upside down like that in Southeast because we don't have the political votes down there for the Mat-Su and Anchorage. The port in Anchorage has got some problems, but when you have, you know, the mass votes, then you can move these big projects that are the prisons, another one. So we've got some problems with our capital projects in the metropolitan areas, not so much in the rural areas because, you know, we just don't have the manpower due to the sheer votes to go after goofy projects. We're too busy trying to kick the lights on. But there are projects that I hand over that are in the Senate version of the capital budget that I don't like. But it's not for me to tell another elected official what's good or not good in his own district. I mean, I'd go right through the roof if some guy from Anchorage was telling me how to heat and energize Sitka. They probably think we're on natural gas. You know, they don't understand the economy down here, and And so we have to rely on those elected officials. Is that a more of a, kind of answers the question a little bit? I can't defend every project that's in the capital budget because I don't have, you know, the ability to just eject everyone I don't like.
Okay, well, thank you. I think that wraps us up for the day. Do you want to make any closing statements?
I think the most important thing to do is vote, even if you happen to vote for my competitor, which I hope you don't. The main thing is you exercise your ability and you do vote, and you look out at, for the best interests of your family and your community, your region and your state. And I think I'm the best of the two selections to do that. And we can compare the records until the cows come home. You can see it in Sitka, you can see it in Ketchikan, in Wrangell, in Petersburg, Thorn Bay. You can visually see it when you come into the communities. The communities are better off today than they were 6 years ago. And if we can, you know, over the next several years, secure Blue Lake and get that running, and then go on to Katz, we'll be in good shape. Let me make one more quick soundbite. Talk to DOT Southeast Director about 11:30. Soma Creek Phase 3 is scheduled to be bid next week. And then Halibut Point in about a month. They should be working on Soma Creek this winter, Halibut Point next summer. The whole town's going to be tore up. And I know the road, Halibut Point Road's a horrible road to drive on. It tears my truck and my car up too. And it's frustrating for me because those projects, both of them were funded several years ago and haven't been built. So we need to move those off and then move, you know, get them onto construction, then go on and continue to build out our community and make our community a better place to live for the future generations. And thank you for your time.